Welcome to Deskmates, your Eurovision podcast. I'm Robbie. I'm your cyborg host.
I'm Ken, and I'm your runestone host.
Oh, okay. Mm. Yeah,
you want to... Old technology.
Yeah. So this is our technology episode, as you'll have seen from the title. So I think of myself as a cyborg on the basis that I don't go anywhere without my phone.
Okay.
And that's, you know, cyborg is the mesh of human and technology, human and machine. I mean, I could survive without my phone, but I don't want to try. So yeah, I think of myself as a cyborg.
I think of myself as a runestone. Going to work and everybody is like these high-tech younger kids that know technology that wasn't in about when I went to university. Mm. So yeah, something like that.
And that moss growing on your shoulder.
Exactly, that's also it. And the big snake I have tattooed on my back. No.
Okay, so yeah, just to introduce this episode,
yeah.
I'll try and give it my go, but then I'm going to hand over the reins to Ken pretty much because... We have said two words we've said more than any other two words in the history of this podcast. And this is episode 20, Ken.
Yeah, I know.
It's a big day.
It's a little bit of jubilee.
We've been doing this for 2 months as well. So it's a bit of a celebration.
Jubilee for us.
Hmm? Jubilee. So two words we said more than any other. Deep dive. We keep saying, oh, we should do a deep dive on that. And so far, we've done a deep dive into Croatia. Mm-hmm. And we've had... many ideas for others. And last episode, or two episodes ago, I think every other thing that we said, we're like, oh, we should do a deep dive. Deep dive. But here it is. And this is a real proper deep dive that's nothing necessarily to do with this year.
No.
Yeah. Whereas Croatia, obviously, we did that because...
of this year.
Yeah, because of this year. So, Ken, you chose this topic. How did you choose this topic?
Yeah, because there are two other words that we've said a lot in this podcast, desk and mates. And we've been doing a lot about the ESC part of the desks, and we've been doing a bit of the mate part also. But where the desks are located, we never discussed really.
Yeah.
And it comes from that we both work at the same company, which is an IT company with also have the word technology in its title.
Yeah.
And we're both coming from a technical background. Mm. So I was just thinking, how do I... make a podcast maybe that can be even more interesting for the people at this company also. Because
Oh, yeah.
We also want our colleagues to listen to this.
Yep.
So why don't we do like a technology spin of it?
Okay, sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, this episode will be very much dedicated to technology, but I have done a Ken spin on it.
Okay.
So, I mean, there are so much things you can dive into if you talk about tech. So this is a little bit of a smorgasbord of all aspects of tech, you know, because... a bit of a history here. You know, Eurovision is done by different countries every year.
I did know that, different... yes. That's one of the things I did.
Yes.
Know.
So one aspect of that is also that every country wants to do something new.
Mm.
They want to show that they are advanced. Some countries during the history have been very new, so they want to like show how technically advanced they are and things like that. But also you want to show the new cool tricks every year. And it is the biggest entertainment show of the year, so you can't put out everything. I mean, there's nothing bigger on TV in the world.
Right.
The Americans can talk about their interview act in some bloody football game, but I don't care. This is the biggest...
yeah,
sure enough.
This kind of came up a little bit. Maybe this is where the seed of this idea came from. In the Croatia deep dive, because we were going through time, you were taking us on a little bit of a tour through the history of Croatia. There was evidently, then you saw the technology change, and you noted specifically when they tried to use those old CRTVs as an LCD kind of screen.
Exactly.
That was one of the things. And then I noted that from one year to the next, I think we looked at two consecutive years, I was like, wow, how much it's changed. And it was because there was a bigger budget. And you said that year Israel were really trying to show off what they had.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I mean, it's a show for TV companies to show off things. But of course, it's also the most technically knowledgeable people wants to be there and show off their stuff.
Yeah.
And it's also working with this, meeting people on Melodifestivalen and Eurovision as I've done, you meet people that are so skilled, like technical people that I'm in awe of them coming from a technical background. And one thing that I can recommend is to look at the multi-camera director from Melodifestivalen, Robert Hovander. He has an Instagram page.
Okay.
When he puts up, like, you can see Marcus and Martinus staging and the song going on, what we see on TV, but they also put in what's happening behind the scenes. And I mean, that's just, you see how much talent and work it goes into it, and that's just Melodifestivalen. Then you have Eurovision, where it's like 37 songs and different languages behind the scenes, everybody, yeah.
I'll put a link to his Instagram in the show notes.
Yes, so, do that, yeah. Sure. You could do a podcast just about like the technical stuff, like, you know, the amperes and the volts and the the lamps and the figures. And I personally think that's super interesting. So I would recommend like both. I know both BBC and SVT last time they did it, they put up a lot of like extra material on YouTube and on their own sites when they were hosting. Like BBC have a lot of nice things from last year, like, wow, look at these lamps, because it's the most skilled people in the world doing this. Like the BBC people are smashing. So, I mean, there are a lot of good ones out there. So if you want like effects and hardware and software and these kind of things, go there. This will not be that podcast. Will not be that podcast. And you could also go there because one other interesting fact about tech is like how much it costs. Like what does just a bloody rocket and stage cost? Like one bang is, that's more than pay the rent for my flat for a month. And it's just ridiculous. There are pages and pods and blogs about that too.
Do you have a number off the top of your head how much like it cost the BBC to put on Eurovision last year?
Oh, I don't have that on top. It's a lot.
I know we're in millions, but are we talking tens of millions?
Oh yeah, sure.
Wow. Well,
sure.
Okay.
But also it brings in very much money to the city that's hosting it, and credibility to the hosting, of course.
If it goes well.
If it goes well. To the broadcaster that do it. So, I mean, a lot of these things you can do if you dive into tech, but this won't be that kind of podcast.
Okay.
It will be something more. This will be Ken's take on Eurovision
That's
tech.
That's what the people are here for, Ken. They're here for your angle.
Yeah. I tried to do like a journey of time for Eurovision. So if you are very tech interested, you will enjoy this. But also if you kind of the person who still don't know why you learn math in school, this will also be very enjoyable.
Okay.
So I built it on music. I built it on you. And yeah.
Let's get into it. Where are we starting?
Yeah, we're turning the clock back almost 70 years to the beginning of Eurovision.
Right.
Because already the second year, I mean, it started in 1956.
Okay.
But in 1957, the second year of Eurovision, we got a song about tech things and tech things used on stage.
Okay.
Yeah. So you will get you will understand what this podcast will be looking at this. Because I show you Germany 1957, Margot Hiesler singing about her phone.
And that's a telephone, not a mobile phone, not a smartphone.
Telefon, wenn dein Ruf erklingt, frag ich mich beim ersten Ton, was er Neues.
Do you want to explain to me what you just saw?
Okay, so the first thing that strikes me is, and I don't know why I hadn't thought about this, but it's in black and white.
That's, yeah, sure.
I hadn't thought about how old Eurovision is. Okay, so it was a lady singing a very sort of Vera Lynn-esque I don't even know what you call that genre of music, but just a nice song.
Yeah.
And she's holding a white Formica telephone, what do you call that, handset? I'm struggling
like
to find
phone.
The word.
Yes,
it's an old phone. And she's singing almost into it like it's a dear friend, like she's singing to it, like
exactly.
the ballad of the telephone.
That's the thing. Also, she's like treating it like a sexual object or something. Like she's just, like it is her boyfriend or something.
Yes.
Like that's just, she's singing to it. Like,
I mean, my German's a little rusty, but I guess she's saying like my friend, the telephone.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the connection to my man who's somewhere, I guess.
Yeah.
She's singing.
Now, can I just say, my history of the telephone is a little rusty, but I'm pretty sure at this point the telephone was around 100 years old. So it's not like this is a new technology.
No, I just think it was like a nice thing for them to like sing, something else to sing about.
Sure.
And you will see during this podcast that, you can.
So contextualize this for me. In 57, what were songs generally about? We've talked before about how in the beginning a lot of songs were about a person, like there was a lot of names in there, you know, women singing to their sweethearts or whatever. But how unusual was this for that, you know?
Quite unusual, I think. I mean, but this is just like a spin on exact what you said. I mean, she's singing, instead of singing a name, she sings telephone. Because like telephone is, that's like her boyfriend.
Yeah. But, yeah.
So that's just the new take on it.
But that's the point. It's the technology that enables that relationship.
Exactly.
And
and everything sounded like this.
Can
like
I just say,
all songs.
Even though the technology is maybe 100 years behind, that feels like a really ahead of its time concept.
Yeah.
To be
bringing a prop on stage.
Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely. Already the second year.
Wow.
So I'm going to get stuck a bit on phones. I'm not going to, we don't need to play all this, but there has been a lot of songs about phones and, okay. In Melody Festival and in Eurovision during the years. One of like the biggest hits in Sweden, like from the Melody Festival songbook, if you would say, from 1980, it's called Vexen Hallå, and it's with Janne Lucas.
And what does that mean in English?
circuit board is that is like
oh yeah no, it's so like a, it's yeah,
when,
yeah, yeah.
when you didn't years like, ago you didn't call somebody directly you called like to the switchboard first and somebody was there and then they, you got connected to somebody else so this is one of the most classical Swedish Melodifestivalen songs ever. I'm just going to tell you a short clip because I also want to educate you in this is a song that I think everybody who has any knowledge about Melodifestivalen in Sweden knows. This was the biggest hit that year. It didn't win, came second. It's just a hit. And it's about a man going to want to meet a woman at the hotel and he needs to call down to the switchboard to get connected to her.
Okay, yeah, brilliant.
We don't have to talk too much about it, but I think this concept...
Can we talk about that a little bit? You know, this year, we've both rightly been very critical of some of the entries in Melody Festival and for sounding a bit old-fashioned, as in, you know, 2015, 2012, because it's, you know, 10 years out of date. That feels very contemporary for 1980. It was like an Elton John kind of, you know, Crocodile Rock kind of vibe.
Very much.
Yeah. So yeah,
he was
good.
Exactly that kind of artist, also sitting by his piano doing it. There is no good clip anywhere of it. Even if you look at it live, they mess it up. So there is like the conductor is like in front of him, and so the sound is terrible. But he's great. Just to continue with with phones and people answering in the circuit board, in 1997, Denmark sent a rap song about a hot operator.
Oh.
Yeah. So here is a piece of Stemmen I mit liv.
Okay.
Denmark 1997. Men, jeg må tage mig sammen, ven. Gribe telefonen og så prøve igen. Jeg trykkede 118, ønskede håbet. Det er oplysning. Og så stod jeg og måbede. Ja, hallo, det er Kai, du... Vi har ringet til oplysningen. Det er øjeblikket. This is like 50 years later, this is 40 years later, exactly 40 years from the German woman we heard in the beginning. Still a phone on stage.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What's that one about? Like, what's the narrative there?
Yeah, I think he thinks about to the operator that he thinks that she's the, like, the Stemmen I mit liv is like the voice in my life.
Right.
So I haven't like deep dived into the lyrics, but either it's the operator herself or it's somebody that he's tried to call again.
I got to say, you know, talking about staging and like high energy performances, those two dancers are doing a lot of heavy lifting. Yeah. There's, yeah, I mean, 97 was a big year for cocaine, so that might explain.
It could have been. I mean, it's just... You see the difference? Same phone. We're saying about phone still.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But the times have changed in 40 years a lot.
Yeah.
But this, I'm just going to want to show you one more thing about the phone. Because it's easy for you maybe, who didn't know that much about Eurovision, think that the stupid and crazy songs are something that's happening now.
Right.
But we had a time in the beginning of 2000 where it was just a public vote.
Right.
In 2006, Iceland sent like a character, this woman called Sylvia Knight. And she was like a bitchy... persona, like there is like a whatever you know, the kind
like
of persona, still
madame
something. Yeah. I mean, I don't know who you, any character that's made up, like Kurt Olsson in Sweden. I mean, you know, like a made up character, somebody plays a character and they send that character
a comedian playing
The difference from now is that nowadays the fans seems to love these crazy things, but back then people were booing because, I mean, she made fun of the contest, blah blah. I just want to show you 5 seconds of this. Yeah, that was Sylvia Knight calling God and calling me, "What's up, dog?"
I love you, Ken, and your friendship means a lot to me, but I'll never forgive you for showing that to me. That's one of the worst things I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. That's terrible. And I like weird crap. That was awful.
Yeah,
but she did have a telephone. Yes, there was a telephone.
She did have a telephone on stage. Exactly, that's what we're coming to. And... Yeah, so there's a lot of telephones that's been on stage. Mm. But we haven't just been singing about telephones, because we have also been singing about telegrams.
Okay.
So not just phones. And now I'm going to show, if you did hate Sylvia Knight, I will show you a real classic here.
Okay.
This is Germany again.
Okay.
1977. So 20 years after our first German lady, we are going back to Germany. And we will listen to Silver Convention, which was a huge disco group at that time. So, yeah, Penny McLean, who was in that group, she had a huge hit with the Lady Bump, which still is something if you...
Silver Convention. I don't think I've ever heard the name.
This is just one of my favorites. So now I'm going. You're going to thank me for listening to something good for us. But here we go. Now we're going to sing about telegrams.
Okay, yeah, no, that's a good song.
That's a
I have a question. So in 77, they're still playing live music. There was obviously an orchestra there.
Yep.
The guys on the stage with like the drums and the guitar, is that also live?
We don't know that.
Okay, because there was...
I wouldn't think so.
There was close-up shots of someone playing like Morse code and you could hear it.
Yeah.
And I think that was live. Like,
could be.
It looked too good to be someone, you know.
It's very interesting. I mean, the song is about exact same thing that Margaret sang about in 1957. They're going to call the man so he can be on his way already tonight. But they are doing it with a telegram and like Morse code. She did it with a phone 20 years earlier. I'm not really sure whether he's going to send him a telegram.
You know how these things go. People like the retro, you know, like people listen to vinyl now, even though we have MP3s or whatever. So, yeah, sure, send a telegram. Why not?
Yeah, and they have the whole shebang on stage, like this whole tech thing with the little thingy
that's crazy
you send telegrams with.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, we jumped a bit ahead of time here.
Can I just...
Yep.
I would like some super, super nerdy Eurovision person to tell me what they were saying in Morse code in that song. That's what I want to know. I'm sure there was a message.
Probably out there, just Google them. It's probably on the wiki page or something. Yeah. I haven't changed.
Yeah. Well, you never know. It could be another one of those nip slips where just...
Or it just said vote for Telegram. But yeah, it would be a waste since people didn't send telegrams to vote back then. It was just juries. But otherwise, it could have been a secret message.
Yeah. I have no idea when telegrams were last used in Germany, for example. So it's just funny. Yeah, good.
That was phones in Eurovision.
Okay.
But we're going back now to 1968.
Observation then. So no one's done smartphone. Like, that's not a...
No, that's not a thing.
Like mobile phone.
Keep your pants on.
Okay. I don't want to get...
Because when everybody got a smartphone, it's not as fun to sing about it. But there are other things you can do with your smartphone and you will soon find out.
Okay.
I promise you.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, brilliant.
So going back again, as you said in the beginning, black and white, 1968... In the Royal Albert Hall, which is an amazing place. I would just make a little pause here and say, if you go to London, go and book a tour, as I did last time I was in London, to see the Royal Albert Hall. It's an amazing place with a great history. And yeah, it's just very nice. They were there, Eurovision, 1968, first time in color. I've heard from a friend that when they were actually broadcasting it, it was black and white. But the day after, they sent it in color for some reason. I have no idea why.
Okay.
But that's I haven't double checked it. I just trust my friend on that.
Have you ever watched the clips on YouTube of the different countries switching from black and white to color?
Yeah.
Have you ever seen those clips?
Yeah, some when they just do different things. Yeah, how they did in different
shows. I think Australia is one of the ones that's like really interesting to watch because they did it quite funny. Like it was three like guys dressed like clowns and the color slowly creeps up from the bottom and they're like trying to fight it. For me as a person who grew up with color TV, I thought it was interesting to see those sorts of things.
1968 was an interesting year in many aspects. All the clips from there are in color, so it's interesting if you look through at history. That's the first year when you see the clips.
Yeah.
And there are some very famous things that year, like Congratulations with Cliff Richard that ended up second.
Wait a second. Example. That was in Eurovision?
Yes, that was in Eurovision.
Oh my God.
Did you know that?
I swear to God, I did not know that. That's
and
like,
he didn't win.
Right. And that's a huge song. Like, I think he probably lived off the royalties of that song for the rest of his life. That and Summer Holiday.
Mm. Great song. That was also the first time that Sweden sent a pop song. I mean, people are complaining about us doing that over and over nowadays, but that was the first time we did it. Mm-hmm. Even if the pop aspect back then was something completely different, but Det börjar verka kärlek, Banne mig, it was called.
Oh, Banne mig.
Banne mig.
Mm. Mm.
So yeah, there were 68 colors came. I mean, it's not, don't have to listen to a song just to show color. It's not just, very, okay. very nice to do it in the podcast. Another thing that you just said was about the orchestra and live singing. I have talked to about before that the orchestra disappeared in Jerusalem 1999. We've talked about that and it never came back. Mm. But the first time they were actually in backing tracks was 1973, my birth year, by the way. So who was back that year? Oh, Cliff Richard. So he was there again. So if you look at that clip, and I'm not going to show that to you there, but just for an example, if you look, that's the first time like the orchestra don't have to play. So if you look behind him, they look very, very angry. Like they just sit there like, I don't know.
I mean, it's understandable response to it's also Richard coming on the stage.
One of the more interesting stagings because the orchestra is like on different floors behind you. Always the orchestra is sort of the scenery for every song there. So it's,
if you don't use them, it's a bit...
Exactly. So it was a very bad year to it. Power to All Our Friends.
Never heard that.
Oh, I can show that to you at some point. I also know that in 1974, like the year after, it was still the same thing. ABBA fought a lot with BBC too, because they thought the backing track music that they had in Waterloo wasn't as loud as the orchestra. So it disappeared a bit and it didn't get the pop aspect that they have. But they're supposed to be correct in the final version in the show.
Right.
So, yeah, things happening. But yeah, almost everybody back then used both backing tracks and orchestras. You just had some things on backing track. So the first song that did like 100% backing track was in 1979, Italy. And I checked that clip, but it's just a song. If you look at it now on YouTube, you don't really know.
I mean, this is the sort of place to just to note that.
Yes.
You know, that we're doing the technology episode. Yep. Absolutely. Okay.
So that's the thing. In 1979, things started to be on tape happening.
And
so,
literally tape. I mean, they would be taking reels, reel-to-reel tape, and it would be someone loading that to a machine and it gets played.
That's how it happened. Of course, everybody didn't like this, like live music disappearing. People don't like it up until today that the orchestra is gone. But yeah, but the only one who did something about it or wanted to comment on it, the whole era we were going into, the 80s, like things being less and less live, you know, the 80s, people not even singing live anymore.
Yeah.
Can you guess what country was the first to make a song about how much they hated this?
So a really authentic country that really likes authentic live music, Portugal.
Exactly. Aye. Of course, Portugal. And now I was just want you to take a deep breath.
Oh, no.
Because this is one of my greatest moments. I think it's probably the best Portugal ever sent. And it's a comment about people singing.
So just to be clear, 79 was the first time Italy did a fully without orchestra at all.
Yes.
But what year was... Oh, it was 99, you said they fully took away the orchestra.
1999.
So it took a while to phase it out.
Yeah, but so they just mix it.
Yeah.
But I think this song is not just a comment on what's happening in Eurovision. It's more a comment on what happened to music in general. Like, the Portugal, somebody singing with a band, like these kind of things, in contrast to what's going on with like punk pop coming, you know, the pop stars in the 80s singing without live music, without anything live, just mimicking on tape, on top of the pops kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just interesting because we talked two episodes ago about Salvador Sobral, where I went and looked into it. And when he won, he did a little sort of speech about, you know, this is a win for authentic music and songwriters, and all of the soul is going out of music. And that was in 2017. So yeah, Portugal, very consistent with their stance.
Absolutely. You can do it in different ways though. This set so much greatness. This is Carlos Paiao with a song called Playback from 1981.
I'm excited.
That's greatness.
I like it. I mean, yeah, the idea that they just play the same song three times, it does get a bit repetitive, but I get the point they're making.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, here's the thing with this song. Of course, don't remember it from 81. I was eight. I was eight. But having met friends living in this Eurovision bubble with so many intelligent people, of course I got to heard, but I've listened to this song so many times. I have it on a lot of playlists and I never really bothered what he was singing about. And then just like a couple of, I don't know, when they started to text things on YouTube, I finally read it and I'm like, geez, this is quite, it's a quite statement. Sharp. It's a statement. Mm. It's not just like a fun song about singing playback. It's really sharp. So yeah, and it's also presented in such a happy, clappy, colorful, nice way.
Yeah, Really driving home that he's taking the piss.
Exactly.
Do you think he looks like anybody you know?
I don't know, maybe.
He, to me, is... He could be the brother of Mons Samlov.
Maybe. I like his clothes.
The less attractive brother, but
I think he's kind of cute, but yeah, maybe, nah, I don't know. Maybe, yeah, sure.
just my observation. But yeah, I mean, a nice song with some really cool like disco strings and fun.
Love it. They came next to last. Scandal. Just Norway, who got 0 points, came last. Do you know who won? It's one of your, 81. One of the things you know.
81 would be Making Your Mind Up. Bucks
Fizz. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Tattooed on my arm. And my heart.
Yeah. So a comment about the 80s. I'm going to tell you a little more about the Eurovision 80s. Satellite broadcasts started in 1985, which meant that Iceland couldn't come into the contest in 1986 before they couldn't see the contest on Iceland. They wanted to be probably, I don't know if they wanted because they didn't know what TV we had, because they couldn't see TV outside their island. But after 85, they could be in it, and they have been in it ever since 86. There's also been a song about a satellite in Eurovision. Sweden sent a song called Satellite.
Two songs.
Yeah, sorry. There will be true. There also been...
No, I'm leaving that in. I'm not cutting that out. It doesn't happen so often.
Yeah, by 85, it had been one song.
Okay, sure.
They came later. But there are two songs about satellites, and except for Lena and the winning song, Sweden sent one in 1979, Ted Gärdestad.
Yes, we've not listened to that either. Before, yeah. So just a quick question, something that just came up when you talked about Iceland not getting the show.
Mm?
From my childhood, at least, TV shows would often have like VHS cassette versions of, like, say the box set, but even like events on TV, you could buy it later on VHS. Did Eurovision never have anything like that? So
no,
people in Iceland couldn't, unless you had someone on the continent who could record it and give it to you.
I don't know. Like that. Hmm?
That's really interesting. Yeah, and maybe that's part of why Icelandic culture and their language has remained so separate from. Yeah. You know, maybe that's a future deep dive about language.
They were isolated.
Okay.
Going back to the 80s, because a lot of things happened in the contest during the 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you look at, like, if you look at 1984 or 85, or songs from 84, 85, or this, we just looked at it from 81, it looks like 15 years older than if you look at the contest in 1988 or 89. So much was going on, like, musically, technologically during that century. So, I mean, some tech things. In 83 in Eurovision, they started with microphones without cords. If you looked at the things that we just saw from 1981. Herreys, Sweden, when they won. 84, Sweden, cords, because we didn't have
Melody Festival.
And then they went to Eurovision, no cords. So you can see Diggiloo Diggiley with cords and without cords.
Okay.
Like. And they were dancing a lot. So, of course, it was good for them to have no cords.
Yeah.
But that's also, of course, shows... things could be happening on stage that couldn't happen before, because you were more like locked into the cord of the microphone.
So,
and then you didn't have to do that.
That's how the technology was restricting the artistic expression on stage.
Exactly.
And then how technology helped
cut
the cord, you might
say. Dancing had always been there, but of course it could be much more.
To go back to the one we just watched, the extent of the dancing was this sort of spasmic... Head twist, because they're all, you know, there's a big bundle of cords on the of mic cables on the stage.
Exactly. Computers also, of course, appeared in the 80s, which means that in 88 they started with a computerized scoreboard. I mean, before it was like a physical thing, but in 88 they were there. And they also had the things that you talked about in the beginning, like what I call the pre-LEDs. Like, it's not an LED screen, but it's TV screens put together, so that could be separate screens or they can work as one big screen. And these walls compiled of like several screens were, of course, both used for the audience for the first time in the arena. They didn't have to just watch small people. They could actually see what was going on. But it also, for several years, was an effect in the background you could see on TV. Like, you saw it there, you can show just the head or something. It's made into something. Laser, that was, I remember when I was a kid in 85, they had very little money because they were going to arrange Eurovision after Herreys had won.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't have that much money to make Melodifestivalen. So they took out the orchestra in 85, but they put in a laser. They put their all money on laser, and it was in the background you know, now you would just, you don't even notice it when you watch 85. Back then it was like all of Sweden was like, oh, that's a laser. Yeah.
Now, my favorite use of the laser would be, of course, Doctor in Melody Festival and with Invincible. Is this on your?
No, okay. It's not there. You mean, no, you mean
Bulletproof.
You mean Bulletproof. The interesting thing with that is you remember the laser things coming from her chest plate.
Yeah.
She, in that number, have the most expensive, one of the most expensive lights that's ever been in Melody Festival. But it's not that. It's just one strike of light that comes down, looking like a small pillar, like you would expect her to do like a strip show around it. If
right,
no, you wouldn't. But you understand what I mean, like that kind of
that vibe.
Yes, and she takes it in her hand and do things with it. It's, and that was super expensive. It came from like a lightning fair somewhere in Europe that the technicians from Melody Festival found it. They just wanted, oh, who can we use it? Who can we sell this to that want that in? So there's the most advanced thing in that number. It's not the laser that you remember. It's something else. But it's one of the most expensive light things that's been
there. That's the kind of fact that people come to this podcast for. Bring in the heat.
And you also like telling people a lot of things that I'm going to tell them. But
I'm sorry.
You know,
spoilers.
80s. We've been singing about telephones now. We've been singing about playback. But of course, we also sang about the things that we really used in the 80s.
Okay.
So now I'm going back to Denmark again. I feel Denmark and Germany, they are very much like the tech countries here. We're going to listen to Brix.
Yep.
Yep. And from 1982, and the song is called, you know, the first song was Telephone, Telephone.
Yeah.
Now we have Video, Video.
Brilliant.
Yeah, in Video Man.
I think I can work out what he's saying.
He thinks he just pushes the button and then he becomes a video man. So he can record Björn Borg and he can record Humphrey Bogart.
Yeah. I recognize that, yeah.
A lot of things that you could add, and he'd want to tell you about it.
That thick synth bass line is, man, I love that. Like, that sound. Have you ever, do you know the song Night Call by Kavinsky?
Nope.
But that I really like that thick, synthy bass line. Yeah, I like that. But this obviously was when it was contemporary. I like exactly. People doing now, it now in a retro way.
That's just music back then.
Yeah.
So, lots of things going on in the 80s. And then came the 90s. And small things happens, like 94, fireworks, first time on stage.
Okay.
Mm. Also 94, live satellite connections to the spokespersons. So before they have sent a telegram, no, they have phoned them and you just hear the voices.
Right.
Now you could actually see them.
Wow.
So that was 94. But I guess the biggest thing happening in the 90s, the biggest thing in the 90s was, of course, internet, because the world never became the same and Eurovision never became the same.
Mm.
And there's so much greatness now that I need to show you. And none of them actually happened. None of them ended up in Eurovision.
Wow.
They're all national finals I'm going to show you. It's maybe there was something in Eurovision that I've forgotten, but these are the ones that I remember. The first one I'm going to show you is the Swedish one. It's actually from Eriksbergshallen, which is very close to where we sit right now. I think this is the closest you will ever see in this podcast, something from where we're actually sitting.
Mm-hmm.
It's Nick Borgen with a song called World Wide Web.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's from Melody Festivalen 1997. Nick Borgen, he had been many times in Melody Festivalen. He has been now, at least. Back then, I don't remember how many times he'd been there. But yeah, he'd been several times, never won. The choir he has behind him, four people, I don't know who they are. In the middle, you will see a woman. Her name was Helen Welton. She was some sort of entrepreneur. She was one of the first who sold laptops in Sweden.
Right.
And she also used sex as her, like, she was pushing it to her chest, showing her. And she was like the CEO of that company. So it was like in Sweden, people got very confused. Like, why are you selling this report? Oh, you are the one making the money. Why is a woman like the CEO? Are you not forced to do this? It was very interesting.
Wow.
She was quite a character, of course. Couldn't sing for shit, but of course she was a name. She was like the face of internet for some, I mean, of that era, 1997.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's why you will see her. This can't be seen on YouTube. But I will show you a clip directly from Melody Festivalen 1997.
Wow.
Here is World Wide Web. World Wide Web. I live here, lyrically, I'm facing a step. I let me So I don't know. I mean, they sing about here, I'm happy. This is my new home address. Like it's, they have no clue what the internet is all about, no. Which is, and of course, 85% of the Swedish people had no idea what the internet were anyway. You know, it's just exotic. Like,
it's like if you sing about AI today, yeah, it's like,
ooh, it's something super modern. Yeah. And also this, they show like old Windows things on the screen and people like, oh, computers. Like,
yeah. Starting the song era with the sound of like the dial-up modem was a pretty cool move because, I mean, maybe a lot of people didn't even know what that sound was, but this year, Marcus and Martinez, it feels like in the bridge, it's almost they're trying to emulate that sound with their sort of matrixy kind of vibe. We have, at this point, doing this podcast, watched a lot of people pretend to play guitar.
Yeah.
That was the most pretendy. Like, he wasn't even trying. Like, yeah.
And he's a guitarist.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, he was thinking about the World Wide Web. Didn't have guitars in cyberspace.
Now that we're in the 90s and we're onto the internet, two things then. Has no one sung about fax?
No, I haven't found anybody singing about the fax.
Or bleepers? That was a thing for a while.
No.
Hmm.
I haven't heard that either.
Okay. Hmm? There's a gap in the market there.
There's a gap in the market. But I mean, we have just started with the internet here.
Okay. Mm. Yeah, yeah.
So this was 97. We're going to jump around a bit because I saved the goodies to last.
Okay.
We're going to go to the Netherlands.
Brilliant.
Two twins.
Oh.
Actually, a double date. They sing about an email to Berlin. I mean, it's connecting people again here.
Mm-hmm.
So this never made it from Netherlands to Eurovision. But so here's a double date with email to Berlin.
Mm. Okay, thank you. I've heard enough.
You don't like an email to Berlin?
This song has me begging the question, when did the technology auto-tune arrive? Because that was god-awful.
Yeah. The thing is, not many countries allow auto-tune. I mean, the Melodifestivalen doesn't do it. Norway do it, but Melodifestivalen doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
So up until this day, like the ability to sing is one of the things that are valued in Eurovision.
Really?
So yeah, you know why it's probably stayed in the Netherlands. This, it says something very important, I think, about technology. Like suddenly, like it was just some years after. Now, 99, people knows what an email is and how you connect people. Like sending an email to Berlin, but they also talk about Slovenia and other kind of like bringing Europe together, which was a huge theme in the 90s, like getting together, more optimistic time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This kind of thing. And the last song in the 90s I'm going to show you from this era about internet, what do you call it? Like the birth of internet is my favorite. Obviously from Germany again, already in 1996. So it's earlier than the two I've just show you.
Yeah.
You're going to see Eurocats singing about surfing multimedia.
Mm.
So now you get all the multimedia in once here. And this is great. Since when I started to work on this episode, I've been listening to this nonstop.
Right.
I just love it. It's so weird. And they put in all like the buzzwords from that time.
Yeah, yeah,
like
yeah.
It's multimedia and it's the data autobahn.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's emails and it's internet and it's, everything.
They're very ahead of their time because they've already got the Decmates merch on.
Exactly. I saw that too.
The blue tops with the gold stars. Yeah, we made that.
We made it.
I mean, so yeah, just to describe, they're wearing the, so it's obviously more a reference to the European Union, and then each of the four of them have a different country flag on their skirts. So what we got represented here, France, Italy, Germany, and is that Netherlands?
Netherlands, yeah. Sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Cool.
Yeah, as I said, this was very much like a Europe time, like bringing the continent together. Yeah, we were so happy that we were like Europe, everybody was getting into the EU, Sweden.
The wall came down a couple of years before.
Yes, and I mean, a lot of other countries were joining. EU that hasn't been, because the EU was quite small before that, and now we were joining and getting together much more. I mean, Eurovision had been a thing, but now we were actually being one country or whatever.
Yeah.
The dream back in the 90s. And then internet came along and made everything easier. Just surf and multimedia together.
Just an aside, you and I had a conversation, was yesterday or the day before, about we started talking about the Cardigans because we referenced it in an episode about how this year's song from Czechia I referenced the Cardigans. And then we started talking about stuff from the 90s. And we was just remarking on how optimistic, looking back now, how optimistic the 90s felt. And I can't get that excited about the internet today. And I use it every single day.
They were so happy.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's interesting.
And also remember what the internet was like back then. You had to wait like 25 minutes to get one picture of Mona Lisa coming up.
It wasn't the Mona Lisa I was watching. Trying to download.
No, me neither. But I just made that because kids are listening to this podcast.
Go to bed.
Some more things from the 90s. I mean, 96, when Norway hosted a contest, they went crazy with the things that you could do at the screen. So they for some reason loved that they could do black and white with some things in color in it. So if you look at that, they also love split screens. So for example, just look at Gina G, which is one of the big hits from that year. Maybe you shouldn't listen to it live, but look at it, one great song from that year. Black and white suddenly. Like, it just goes from color to black and white to color from black and white. You're like, what? Yeah, they were very, very happy, the Norwegians, that they can do all these things. And there was also the first virtual studio for voting. So she goes into like a big green screen and says something. And then suddenly, poo, she's like in a super ugly computer game from the 90s. Yeah. Like a big industrial kind of thing. It's so ugly. But then people were like screaming in front of the TVs, probably like, oh, what is that doing? So yeah, split screens, video effects, totally unnecessary, but man, they could do it, the Norwegians. 97, something else that changed the contest, because now there were pan-European televoting. So people were voting almost all, not every country, but a lot of countries were voting, and get the results were like done by the people. Because before there had always been juries just sitting, and then more and more it gradually went into people voting. So over 250,000 people voted in UK, for example, 1997. So it was just like a huge hit. Crawling Forward, new millennia. First time I remember there was like moving LED screens on stage was in Stockholm. I was so proud. If you look at like 99 and then 2000 in Stockholm, the Swedes pull everything out. The first time you are like in an arena with people screaming, like it's in Globen. It's a completely different feeling. It feels so high tech, or I felt it back then. Now when you look at it, it feels very much the millennium, like very off the moment. Yeah. But I just loved it.
Did you, as a person that likes visiting London, did you ever go to the Millennium Dome before?
Not before it turned into the O2 Arena.
Yeah, so I went to the Millennium Dome in 2000. I was very, you know, of the moment.
Yeah.
And saw Cirque du Soleil perform there. But it's really funny looking back. It was a big sort of a museum exhibit, and like BT, British Telecom, who were the big provider, they had a big stake in it, and that, you know, became O2. And I just remember going there, and it was a lot of like interactive touchscreen panels and stuff that were like the future of the internet in the UK. And like looking back now, it's really bad.
Another thing that happened first time 2000, streaming. They were streaming it on the, I guess that must be hell to watch it, but somebody was streaming it.
Wow.
My guess is now that it was more a thing, we're streaming it, than somebody could actually watch it. But yeah, sure, they were streaming it first time 2000. 2005, widescreen. I mean, before it has been the Instagram format, as you kids call it, because most TVs were squared.
4:3 exactly. Is the technical
but
term, sure.
But then more and more TVs started to be flat screens and
widescreen.
Widescreen. So 2005, 2006, we go more into tech, spider cameras. Do you know what that is? The flying spider cameras?
Oh, yeah, on the cables.
When you have cameras in different cables in the roof, so it can the camera can go almost everywhere in the arena. Sometimes you get seasick, especially in the beginning, but I just want to show what this camera could do, but it was there. HD, high definition, 2007. This is interesting. 2007 in Finland is the first time they broadcast this in HD.
Yeah.
But they actually recorded it in HD the year before, but they didn't broadcast it. But during the pandemic, now I'm a bit of a sidetrack here, but during the pandemic, since we were all stuck at home, Eurovision, they sent like once a month, or if it was every Saturday at some point, they broadcast one old Eurovision, because and people could vote and redo the whole experience, like, because we were all sitting at home. And then I found this 2006 tape and put it up on YouTube and broadcasted it in HD, which was quite interesting because, yeah, if you look at clips before that, they are, as we have seen, not very good to look at. After that, they are crystal clear to look at. So, I mean, if you look at 2006, it's very fun as a fan to watch it. Of course, there's no, like, no computer graphic, there are no like postcards, all these things that you could see on the screen is not there because it's just like the raw...
It's the raw recording.
Yeah, the raw recording. But yeah, it's super interesting. 2009, Russia, they used the biggest LED screen in the world.
Wow.
And here's the thing. I don't know if you ever seen anything from 2009, but it's so big. It's like ridiculously... First of all, the arena is honestly as big as a small city in Sweden, I would say. It's the biggest thing I've ever seen.
Wow.
Then they build up a LED wall there that's... I mean, it was so big. So the year after in Oslo in 2010, they decided to have nothing on stage. Like, there's no LEDs, there's nothing, because they were like, we're not going to compete with that. So that year is just like a proper like stage from like the 70s. It's just a stage. That's the thing. And they had like a thing hanging from the roof, maybe something, and something would happen. Nothing, because they were like exhausted by the thing that the Russians did.
Yeah.
I think they overdid it. And in many ways, it just turned into like a LED inferno. But since you haven't seen it, I'm going to show you something. Yeah. I chose a Sad Girl song from that year, from Iceland, that came second.
Yeah.
It's called Is It True by Joanna, and I just want to show you the LED screens mostly for this.
Holy smokes.
Look. Say you really know me, you're not afraid to show me what is in your eyes. So there was also a connection to this year. Hera Björk is in the choir. I don't know if you saw her.
Okay.
See her, she is back there.
Can I just say, as a person that used to work in an electronics store selling TVs, this gave me PTSD. There was too many screens. Too many screens. Didn't like that.
Yeah,
at
I mean,
all.
As I said, looking at that a whole evening, you were just, your brain were like, what's happening?
Yeah.
I mean, I know, of course, you know, that's the thing. When I go big.
Compensating much?
Yeah, exactly. Mr. P was there in the arena.
Yeah.
Yeah. One other thing that 2009 had that it didn't show here is like they had cameras on Segways. So there's this one shot that actually won an award with a guy, like the camera is like coming in full speed and going up on stage and going around in a way. That was the first time they used the Segway in.
Okay.
So, yeah. So 2013. Suddenly we enter the age of iPhones and the official Eurovision app arrives. Not that it has made that much mark, but San Marino, they were 1 year early with singing about apps. So written by Ralph Siegel, he was 66 by the time. In many ways, he's a legend in Eurovision. One point we could probably just deep dive into his catalog. He's written 24 songs in Eurovision and so many more in different national finals. He won once, but that's another thing, another story. We're going to watch something. First, you're going to hear the original version of this that was released from San Marino.
Okay.
It couldn't be, they had to rename it, so we're also going to see it live a little bit later. But first, you hear the original version. Wanna be in the dream and have some fun. If you wanna be on the hook, simply take a look. Facebook, everybody loves you so. Do you want to be more than just a friend? Do you want to play cyber sex again?
And San Marino have never won, you say. Okay, no. that's terrible. And I don't ever want to hear that again. So the idea of listening to it again is giving me...
You will, because this is like a classic.
Cold sweats.
In some way. I mean, you understand why it is a classic. It's so bad.
Sure.
So
No. Iconically bad. Look, this is the shit that in the UK we associate with Eurovision. And I thought you were trying to change my mind.
Not when it comes to Valentina Moneta. Here... Yeah. It's the Social Network song. Ooh, ooh, ooh. You share the internet. Do you really like politics? Why not talk about beauty queens? Are you really a sex machine? Or just a beauty queen? Everybody here's better than before. Everybody. You're not a full-fledged Eurovision fan until you've heard the shit also. And this is part of your education.
I can feel something about me getting enriched in some way. I don't know if I'm losing brain cells or what, but yeah, no, I understand what you're saying. Now, on Friday, in 2 days' time from recording this, we have a karaoke after work.
Yeah.
So, Ken, I think you know what needs to be done.
You want to play cyber sex again?
No. All right.
And I mean, there's so many things here. with this. We've now traveled a long way from telephone. Mm. Still, she has a little computer on her on
she
stage.
A little laptop.
A little laptop.
Bedazzled laptop.
A bedazzled laptop. Also, behind her on the screen, there were people sending in their photos so they could be on the Eurovision stage. So they are like flying over there.
Okay.
Like people are sending in photos.
They did a thing in was it in the pandemic where people were showing their... During the pandemic where people were filming themselves at home watching... Was it Mello or was it Eurovision?
I don't remember.
But there was something, right?
Yep.
And then it was like, oh, you're all here together. Mm. Yeah.
So kind of like that. Now we are in the age of apps. And I think this is like probably the biggest tech thing from later years that people remember, because of course it's so bad.
Yeah.
And it's also like the idea from the beginning is so bad to sing about Facebook, because there was... If you think about it, telephones, all the thing connecting people, the internet connecting the Europe thing. Now, when we're all disconnected, singing about Facebook, even if it was a new thing, 2012 or relatively new, it doesn't have the same like edge to it. Like people are not like, oh, this is fun. Just this is how it is. Something of technology has just lost its
sheen.
Its sheen.
Yeah.
So it's not. Which is why I wanted you to look at this, because it's not the same thing. Then you should remember there are still things. I mean, if you look at Who the Hell is Edgar last year, that was about Spotify, done in a very different way.
That was not
loving the tech. That was more questioning the tech.
More of a Portugal playback.
Multiple playback kind of approach.
So just two things then. So originally in San Marino, it was called...
Facebook
Uawawa.
Yeah, there was not even... They just let it out. They chose it internally.
And now it's called Social Network, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Windows 95 man this year, they're not allowed to call it Windows 95 because of the trademark. Was it the same thing? You can't say Facebook?
Yeah, you can't say Facebook.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's a company.
I mean, it's also, look, in whatever this was, 2012, we were all very optimistic about Facebook, about bringing people together, about being able to connect to people.
True.
We didn't know it was going to radicalize our parents into thinking that immigrants were going to, you know, steal their puppies or whatever, whatever the fuck is happening.
No, yeah.
I forgive 2012 people for
not understanding.
For not knowing. Yeah,
I certainly forgive people in the 90s for thinking internet is the best thing that will unite Europe. Like, yeah, sure, baby.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to happen.
No, we're going to use it to argue with each other. About.
Another thing, actually, I don't know if you remember from Melifestivalen just a couple of years ago during the pandemic, Eva had a song called Rena Rama Ding Dong.
Nope.
Whatever. First, it was called Come and Tikka Tokka with Us, because it was like a reference to TikTok, and that had to be removed.
Right.
So they had to write something else in Sweden just because you couldn't sing it. So that's how...
That's interesting.
That's how we do it.
But, because, look, Facebook clearly wasn't a word before Facebook came along, but TikTok, they took...
A clock.
Like, I mean, even Keisha had a song. Was it Keisha?
Yeah.
Yeah, called TikTok.
Okay. Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, obviously with CK, tick, you know, but like that's a weird one to say, no, you can't use that.
Exactly.
They named the social media after
and
the thing.
And these were like two old women. I guess the problem were that they actually told people like in the beginning,
it's about
old women getting onto TikTok. And I was like, okay, then we have to change it.
Yeah, okay, yeah, sure.
So, yeah, something like that. Yeah, 2012. 2016 in Stockholm, holograms, first time on stage. Yeah.
Okay.
Belarus, the guy there, he wanted to be naked with wolves. On stage.
Don't we all?
Yeah, exactly. And it wasn't allowed not to be naked, not to be having wolves on stage. So they sold it with holograms. So he's naked as a hologram. The wolves are there. And then he came in with clothes on, singing with the hologram wolves.
Okay.
Also, Dami Im that year, Australia, came second. She was like sitting on something, like doing the Minority Report thing, like in the air. Switching things around, like that. So
I've already made my prediction on this podcast that this year we will see the ABBA holograms on stage in Malmö. I've said it already, so I'm calling it.
And I don't think that will happen.
Well, you have inside information. I'm making a prediction.
No, I don't. I just don't think they will. I mean, that costs a shitload of money to transport that from London. And
no, but I mean, send the file over. I have to bring the whole fucking thing.
That's not how it works.
No?
No. Just send the file. Just share it.
Put it on the cloud, baby.
Put it on the cloud.
Has anyone sung about the cloud yet?
No. Maybe, if somebody sang about the cloud, please let us know. Mm. And with that we mean, of course, the cloud, not
rain
any
clouds.
Cloud. There's probably a cloud.
There's probably clouds, yeah.
I mean, I haven't choosing a song with the holograms in it. If I would say that if somebody wants to watch something, I will mention one of my favorite cheesy moments. It's Romania in 2014, because two of my favorites, Paula Selling and Ovi, came back. They had a song some years before, and now they came back for Romania again. I was singing a song called Miracle, which is horrible, but they wanted to do some miracles on stage. So in the beginning, he's singing, and then there's a hologram of her singing, right. And then suddenly it just dissolves, and she comes from another hole, and he sings, "It's a miracle." The thing is, she doesn't really look like it's a miracle. Okay. I can show you that. Yeah, I just needed to show you that.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
So, ultra high definition, 2022. We're getting very close. So now we are here in the age of AI. Mm. That's where it all started. I mean, Norway had my AI this year, Erika and Super Rob. Mm. We've already talked about them in earlier episodes.
Yeah.
But San Marino again. San Marino. There's a lot of San Marino here in the end. They also had robots on stage at some point. I didn't show you the robots, but there were robots.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want them to compete with Super Rob. But yeah, anyway, they had robots at some point. They had a separate contest this year with songs written by AI completely. So they had like a separate contest, and one song that won that was in their regular contest. So we will bring this episode to an end. Mm-hmm. We'd listen to the first completely AI-generated song in the contest history. It didn't make it to Eurovision, but this is a start. We will listen to Dana Gillespie, and she will sing about the last polar bear.
Okay.
Mm. I'm just a polar bear who's trying to survive, who's hoping to just stay alive. Tell me, is...
So yeah, environmental take from AI there, singing about the polar bear dying.
We're all going to be replaced, Ken, if this is how good... AI is at, you know, songwriting. What hope
Gerson is that? Gerson is shitting his pants.
speaking of AI, I just very quickly asked ChatGPT-4 to write a sign-off for a Eurovision podcast taking a deep dive into technology in the contest. Would you like me to read what it said?
Yeah, but I will end it.
Do you have your own rap? Well, let's do human versus machine then. That's a wrap on today's episode of Tech Vision Eurocast. We've unplugged the tech behind the glitz, revealing how innovation amplifies the magic of Eurovision. Stay tuned for more deep dives into the digital heartbeat of the contest. Until next time, keep the rhythm alive and let the music play on. That's significantly better than anything we've ever said at the end of a podcast.
Jesus, we're also getting replaced now.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you still need the voice. In fact, no, you don't, because of course it could read that out. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't summarize it better than they. But I hope you learned something this little take and this little journey through technology in Eurovision.
I've really enjoyed this. This is fantastic.
I hope you also have some great music you can put on your playlists.
Now, let me just say this: I have known that Eurovision has at points been bad. You have expanded my understanding of how bad it can be, is what I would say. There are definitely some highlights here. It's not all terrible. But what I would say is, I don't think it's a good idea to try and do something like this, like to be so contemporary of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Because, looking back,
it gets very old.
Yeah, it's very dated.
I would say like the telephone thing and the telegram things that we look at in the beginning of this episode, they feels much more like fresh, and you can understand why they're there. And then, I mean, the internet things in the 90s, which are of course my favorites, they are horrible today, but they are very much a child of their time. But they didn't make it to Eurovision. We have to remember that.
Yeah.
So somebody had a decency to take them away before they reached the stage. I hope everybody liked this little take. And also, as I said in the beginning, please write if we missed something so we can do a little recap next week and see if there's something that we absolutely missed. I know there has been some robots. And I also, of course, know there had been some great props on stage, but that's another episode.
That's like another
props
deep dive.
On stage.
Yeah. An interesting one for a podcast, which is traditionally an audio medium, Ken, that we're going to talk about physical props on stage. But yeah, sure.
That's why we started a YouTube channel, Robbie.
Oh.
Yeah, so we've got
a plug.
So for each episode from now on, I will try to do a compilation of the videos that I've shown you so people can watch them while they're listening to our episode. Or afterwards, or whenever, in their phone, when they like.
And I will link to that playlist from each episode.
Exactly. So, Robbie, where are they going to send if they know that I've missed something about
where
tech?
Could they send it?
Where
You could send us a telegram.
Yes, send us a telegram.
An email to Berlin.
Surf us on multimedia.
On the data Autobahn. No, you could probably, I think, send us a DM on Instagram.
Yep.
Which is the social network of choice. Also owned by Zuckerberg. You could email us at
decimates@gmail.com.
You could reply directly under the episode in Spotify. Yeah, and this is now the third episode we're recording this week and putting them out over 3 weeks. So no doubt by the time you're hearing this, a lot of things have happened. You're wondering why we haven't talked about them. So next week...
Then it will happen. Yeah. Next week also our big Eurovision party will happen.
And we will be having our big Eurovision after work. Yes, absolutely. So I would just like to finish by saying, until next time, Eurocats, please Euro back.
Eurocats. I didn't even realize that was there.
The question is, how much of just us laughing at the end of the episode is an acceptable amount? Yeah.
Eurocats, please telegram us back.
Have a good one. Thanks. Bye-bye.